So we've got the Christmas story, and Mary and Joseph, and going to their parents, probably getting permission to get married, and eventually got married. Wasn't too long before Mary got pregnant. Of course, the reality is that actually, when we think about the Christmas story, that's what we think about so often. But actually, reality number one is the birth of Jesus was a teenage pregnancy. Mary, some people think, could have been as young as 13, maybe 15. So we're talking about here the Christmas story about teenage pregnancy. This would have caused a storm. It probably would have caused a storm today. But back then, it would have caused an almighty storm. Mary would probably have been rejected by everybody. Her family, her parents, everybody. Having a baby as a teenager and out of wedlock was a no-no. I know we hear a lot today about teenage pregnancy in our society, in the West, and particularly our country, with high rates. But this would have been shocking. Joseph was probably the only one who stood up for her. We don't know, but it probably was. And that was after the intervention of God himself through an angel. Joseph and Mary would have been shunned, with families and neighbours probably declaring their moral outrage at something like this. And yet, that's the setting that Jesus came into this world. Anyway, despite this messy beginning, they were able to sort things out, and eventually the baby was born in a palace. After all, he was the king of the Jews. Not quite. Poverty. We know Jesus wasn't born in a palace. He was born in a stable. There wasn't any other room. We don't know whether it was a stable as such. It could have been a room, a back room of an inn, a hotel. It certainly wasn't the place you would normally offer to somebody, to a guest.
The Son of God was born, probably, as far as we know, with Adam's. He was born into a situation of poverty. A teenager had a baby in a stable. And we know that Mary herself would have been very rich. She wouldn't have had any particular income. She was probably cut off from any support from family. She didn't have a job. At that stage, she wasn't having money. Joseph was a carpenter. Would have had some income, but of course they had to move for the census. They wouldn't have a lot of money coming in. They weren't exactly
involved in it. They didn't exactly have a lot of options when it came to money. Anyway, the birth of Jesus, as we know, drew quite a crowd with all sorts of visitors, from shepherds to wise men, even King Herod wanted to come and visit and to offer his congratulations. Not exactly. Genocide is the next thing we see at Christmas. King Herod wanted to come and kill the baby. He didn't want to come himself, but he sent orders to kill the baby. He hears that this baby's been born. Some people talk about him as a king. He feels threatened. So what does he do? He orders that anybody under the age of two in Bethlehem is killed. Herod recognizes something about Jesus that is special and a threat to his kingdom. And it's genocide, something that we are abhorred about today when we hear it in other countries, some of the African countries of recent. He's so determined to kill Jesus that he's willing to sacrifice many lives to get to this one baby. Not to dismay, not long after the birth, they moved to a lovely location on a three-bedroom house on the end of a lovely estate. You're getting the hang of this, aren't you? No, they didn't. They became asylum seekers. Jesus' parents were warned that their lives were in danger because of Herod. They couldn't go back to the places that they were familiar with, maybe to any person who was supporting them. Their lives were in danger, so they fled to Egypt. They became asylum seekers as such. They were forced to live in exile. It's not like the story you or I grew up with, is it? And we could go on and can add military occupation by the Romans. We can add corruption, including the church. In fact, more often than not, the church makes the expenses claim we've had recently look pretty petty. Jesus entered the world as the child of a teenager, as part of what we probably could see from that moment on was a dysfunctional family. He was born into poverty and a world where military occupation, genocide, and political oppression were commonplace. Jesus was born an outcast, arguably, a homeless person, a refugee. Yet, this was God's choice. This was God's choice that somehow you and I can relate to this baby. Take the palace, for example. If he'd been born in a palace, who could have seen Jesus? But actually, Jesus understands every bit of our lives. And some of the lives, some of the bits we've mentioned, hopefully we'll never experience. But he understands, I believe, every situation that he's been in because he was born into it. And God chose Jesus to be born into that situation. So I want to read something called One Solitary Life, which you may have come across before, about the life of Jesus. But I just wanted to sort of, you know, I hear a lot of Christmas story, and it's great, but the danger is we wrap it up a little bit and make it a little bit fairy tale-ish. But the reality is it was far from a fairy tale. And it's a shame when we make it into a fairy tale. Yes, it's great to see nativities and what the school do and everything else and all that sort of thing. I'm not knocking that. But actually, let's get a handle of what some of this Christmas story was about. And actually, let's get a handle of the meaning of it and the challenge of it to us. One Solitary Life. Here is a man who was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another obscure village. He worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. And then for 3 years, he was an itinerant preacher. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never owned a home. He never had a family. He never went to college. He never put his foot inside a big city. He never traveled 200 miles from the place where he was born. He never did one of the things that contemporary society would consider a sign of greatness. He had no credentials but himself. He had nothing of this world, only the power of his divine manhood. While still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends ran away. One of them denied him. Another betrayed him. He was turned over to his enemies. He went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only piece of property he had on earth, his coat. When he was dead, he was taken down and laid in a borrowed grave through the pity of a friend. 20 centuries have come and gone, and today he's still the centerpiece of the human race, the greatest source of guidance and divine inspiration. The writer here, James Francis, says, "I am far within the mark when I say that all the armies that ever marched and all the navies that ever were built and all the parliaments that ever sat and all the kings that have ever reigned put together have not affected the life of man upon the earth as powerfully as this one solitary life." So this Christmas, as you think about it, maybe you just want to bear some of this other side of the story there and to think about the claims that Jesus has on your life. I hope you've enjoyed, had a lot of fun watching, being part of today's service, but I hope also, you know, it's challenging to think about how, without repeating myself, you can make room for Jesus this Christmas. I think it's one of the dangers is that we look to people who are outside the church and say, oh, you know, they don't do Christmas and they don't do this, that and the other. But actually, you know, it has to start with us and our response to Christmas.